Turn with me, please, to Luke 15 as we read the parable of the prodigal son, which of course sets the context for tonight. The reminder from last week, we'll read Luke 15, verses 11 to the end of 24. Luke 15, verses 11 to 24. And he said, "There was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of the country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs had, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Bring quickly the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate." And we know that God blesses the reading of his word.
Would you turn to the passage that David read to us in Luke 15, and we'll pick up our reading where David left off.
So Luke chapter 15 and verse 25.
Luke chapter 15 and verse 25. "Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, 'Your brother has come, and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has received him back safe and sound.' But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your command.
Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fatted calf for him.' And he said to him, 'Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found.'" We know God will always bless the reading of his word. So we have, over the last number of weeks, been looking at the parables in Luke 15. You have the parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost silver, and the parable of the lost son. And I suppose that's where most would end their study. We have looked at the three parables in turn in Luke 15. But I want you to notice that Jesus doesn't finish with the feast for the returning prodigal. But from verse 25 on, you have this kind of postscript about the elder brother. Now, a lot of books and a lot of sermons pay too little attention to this elder brother. If they mention him at all, it's only as a fleeting reference. The main thing for them is the return of the younger brother. And of course, that's a wonderful thing. Here's a younger boy, younger son of, it seems, a wealthy landowner who demands his share of the inheritance. In a Middle Eastern context, that would have meant the father dividing up his land, liquidating a portion of it in order to raise the cash to give the inheritance that was due to the younger brother, a value of a third of all the land that he possessed. It was virtually saying to the father, I can't wait to get my hands on the inheritance. I wish you were dead. Give me now what's coming to me. But in spite of the undoubted scandalous reaction of the village and the family, we are told in verse 12, the father divided his property between them. The younger brother heads off to a far country, as far away as he can go from his farm, from his family, and from his father, far enough to prevent the father's influence reaching down to him, and far enough so that reports of his behavior don't filter back to his father. And in that far country, in verse 13, we're told he squandered his wealth in reckless living. The older brother accuses him in verse 30 of squandering his wealth on prostitutes. The only job he can find is feeding pigs, the most degrading job possible for any Jew, for the pig was an unclean animal and something that was forbidden for the Jew to eat and to touch. And then he begins to think and he begins to consider and he realizes that the hired day laborers in his father's farm are better off than him. And so he swallows his pride rather than swallowing the pig food at the trough. And he decides to go back and ask his father for a laboring job. He deserves nothing more and he expects nothing more than that. But the father is watching for him. How long the younger son had been away, we don't know. But the father is looking and longing for his son. And when he sees him appear on the horizon, we're told that he went out to him. Now, the significance of that can be lost in us because middle-aged Middle Eastern men did not go out and certainly didn't run out to rebellious sons. It was an undignified thing to run. Children ran, but fathers, middle-aged men, did not run. To cease running was an indication of growing maturity, and maybe joggers need to take that into account. And the father runs out to him, and while the smell of the pigsty is still on the younger son, he embraces him and he kisses him repeatedly. What a picture of grace. What a picture of compassion. What a picture of love. What a startling revelation this was to these villagers. The father goes out to receive the son who had offended him and humiliated him in such a grievous way. It's a wonderful picture of God's willingness to receive back repentant sinners. And the father puts a ring on his finger, the symbol, as we were thinking this morning, of authority. He puts a robe upon him, indicating that he is now more than a hired servant, that he has authority, he's part of the family. And he puts sandals on his feet, which indicates the poverty to which the boy had sunk when he was away in the far country. And then he kills the fatted calf and throws a party for the returning prodigal. And I have to say that the father is always willing to receive, is delighted to receive, returning repentant prodigals. And if you have wandered away from God, I want to tell you that God will receive you if you turn back to him. But the story doesn't end there. You know, the Sunday school teacher who asked his class, who wasn't happy to see the prodigal son come home? And the little boy put up his hand and said, the fatted calf. And I'm sure that's true. But what the Sunday school teacher meant, of course, was the elder brother. And it's the elder brother we want to focus on this evening. And I want you to notice three things. First of all, the identity of the elder brother. Who is this elder brother? Who does this elder brother represent in the parable? Well, remember the context of all three parables in Luke 15, verses 1 and 2. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to hear him. And the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. So you have two groups of people. You have tax collectors and sinners on one hand, and you have scribes and Pharisees on the other. You have the irreligious and the religious. You have the unrighteous and the righteous. And these two sons represent those two groups. So the younger son who goes into the far country, he represents the tax collectors and sinners. And the other brother, the elder brother, he represents the scribes
and the Pharisees. The Pharisees and the scribes were the ultra-Orthodox Jews of their day who took seriously the commands of God and scrupulously tried to implement and observe each one. And they resented Jesus freely mixing with those who they considered to be on the fringes of Judaism, who had abandoned their faith and brought shame on the faith of the Jews,
these tax collectors and sinners. And it's these scribes and the Pharisees that are represented by the elder brother. And in fact, it could be argued that they are the main focus of the parable. That this is not so much the parable of the prodigal son, but the parable of the Pharisaical son. That the information given about the prodigal son and his return is only a detail that sets the scene for the ultimate reaction of the elder brother. And so to ignore the elder brother is to miss the whole point of the parable. So what we have here is not so much the parable of the prodigal son, but the parable of the Pharisaical son who reacts badly to the returning son. At the very least, this is not the parable of the lost son, but the parable of the lost sons. And it teaches us that it's possible to be lost at home, just as it's possible to be lost in the far country. That lostness is not just a matter of geography and distance, but attitude and heart. That it's possible to be religious and to be morally conformed to God's law, yet to be far from the Father, as far as the prodigal was in the far country. That you can be lost in the Father's house, as well as in the far country. And that's the sobering point of the parable. I wonder if I'm talking to any elder brothers tonight. Because it's more likely that elder brothers would be in this service than prodigals. The prodigals are in the far country, and they may, of course, wander in from time to time. And if that's you, you're very welcome. And I want to say to you, the Father's arms are open to receive you, but it's more likely that the church will have elder brothers in it than returning prodigals. So you might say to yourself, well, how do I know? How do I know if I'm an elder brother? Well, Jesus describes the elder brother for us. He gives us the marks, the symptoms of being an elder brother. And what we want to do tonight is do a little surgery. We want to cut into the elder brother. We want to examine him. We want to carry out a post-mortem. And we want to see what an elder brother actually looks like. And that brings us then to our second point, the marks of the elder brother. What is an elder brother like? Well, he is religious, and so are we. That's why we're here this evening. But is there anything in this passage that helps us identify, to diagnose what it is to be an elder brother? Well, I think there are a number of things. First of all, a lack of joy. Look at verse 28. But he was angry and refused to go in. This elder brother is not a happy bunny. He is absolutely miserable. Indeed, the text says he was angry. In fact, in the passage, everyone is happy except this elder brother. He is surly, he is bitter, he is angry. Look at verse 31. And he said to him, "Son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It is fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found." Everyone is celebrating but the elder brother. Everyone is dancing but the elder brother. There's no music in his life and there's no dancing in his heart. He had no joy. Now, of course, some Christians can be pretty miserable at times. Richard Baxter, the Puritan, gave this advice to young Christians. He says, "Try to mix with Christians that are of a cheerful sort. Miserable Christians make you miserable. Spurgeon says of some Christians, I'm sorry to say that they are naturally sour. They seem to have been born at the season of crab apples and to have been fed on vinegar. There are some pretty miserable Christians. But you see, this passage is saying more than that. It's telling us that joylessness in one's faith is not just an evidence that there's something wrong with your Christian life. It may be an indicator that there's no faith at all, that it's the mark of an elder brother. And that, of course, is backed up with Scripture. Remember what Paul says in Galatians 4, that the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. That the evidence of the Spirit taking up residence in our heart and life is joy. The true Christian, says Peter, in 1 Peter 1 and verse 8, is filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy. It was Robert Rainey, the principal of the Free Church College, when it was in Glasgow, who wrote, "There is a joy, is a flag flying high from the castle of my heart, for the King is in residence there." When our Queen then goes to one of her palaces, the royal standard indicates that she is in residence. Well, joy is the mark, it's the flag that indicates that the King is in residence in our hearts. So are you sour, and bitter, and miserable, and critical? Could it be? And I'm only asking the question, could it be that that's an indication that you're an elder brother rather than a returning prodigal? John Wesley said, "Sour godliness is the devil's religion." And it must be from the devil because it's certainly not from God. So that's the first mark of the elder brother, a lack of joy. The second is a lack of love or devotion, a lack of devotion to God. Look at verse 29 carefully. Look, he says, it's interesting, he says, look, doesn't he? He doesn't address him by his title. He doesn't say Father, indicating that he has no real meaningful relationship with the Father. Look, these many years I have served you. The NIV says, all these years I have been slaving for you. And served is far too weak. It's the Greek word doulos, the word for slave. He had a slavish view of his service. It was something that he reluctantly rendered, something that he had to do. His service to the Father was not a labor of love, but a duty that he reluctantly engaged in. Remember Paul's words in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 14. He says, "For Christ's love compels us," that our service is driven by his love for us and our response of love to him. It's not a burden to serve the Lord. It's a delight to serve the Lord. Remember what we were reading of Jacob in our study in Genesis, that he worked for Rachel's hand in marriage for 7 years, but it only seemed, we're told, like a few days because of his love for her. You see, when love is present, our work for the Father is not slavish. It's a delight. And an elder brother can be distinguished by his attitude to the work that he does for the Lord. It's something that he reluctantly gives rather than delightfully renders. Do you resent the intrusion that your faith brings into your life? It's inconvenient. You resent the service. You resent the time that you have to give up to serve the Lord. Perhaps the reason why you feel like that is because you have no real love for God in your heart, and you are an elder brother rather than a returning prodigal. William Cooper says in one of his hymns, "To see the law of Christ fulfilled and hear his pardoning voice changes a slave into a child and duty into choice." You don't slave for a father. To work for your father is your delight. The marks of an elder brother: a lack of joy, a lack of love. Thirdly, a lack of guilt. Look at verse 29 again. "But he answered his father, 'Look, these many years I served you, and I never disobeyed your command.'" The Authorized Version says, neither transgressed any time thine commandment. Now, what a claim. I have never disobeyed you. Oh, really? What about your present attitude? What about your disrespectfulness to your father? He embarrasses the father in front of his guests by refusing to go in. He addresses him in the most disrespectful of terms. Look, he says, look, he says, not father, look. It's like saying, hey, you. And when you understand that a host in the Middle Eastern context, the host, the elder brother, acted as host and was responsible for the well-being of the guests and making sure that they have plenty of food and plenty of drink to give them a good time, that becomes all the more apparent. Everyone present in that house would have been very conscious of the absence of the elder brother. And when the father went out to him, they could hear the row developing. He insulted and brought shame on his father in front of his guests. Now, it is true that the younger brother had brought shame on the family by squandering the father's property. But now the elder brother does the same. Now, that is a mark of an elder brother. He sees the sins of others. He highlights the sins of others, but he is oblivious to his own guilt before God. You remember the parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee who go up to the temple to pray. What does the Pharisee say? Lord, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. He highlights the sins of others, but he's oblivious to his own sin. What about the pride and the hatred that's in his heart towards others? He had no sense of guilt before God. It's easy to focus on the sins of others and to use the sins of others as a smokescreen for our own sins. You see, a true Christian senses his guilt before God and condemns his own sin before he condemns the sins of others. It's the elder brother, the self-righteous Pharisee, that feels no guilt before God. Jesus said it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. He came into the world to save sinners. And he saves those who feel their sin, who know their sin, who feel their sin, who smart under their sin. Do you feel your sin? Are you quick to condemn? And you excuse yourself. You point out the sin of others, but fail to point out your own sin. Could it be that you're an elder brother rather than a returning prodigal? So the marks of an elder brother are a lack of joy, a lack of love, a lack of guilt. The fourth thing is a lack of thankfulness. Look at verse 29 again. Look, these many years I have served you, and I never disobeyed your commands, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. He is jealous and resentful over the fact that the father had slaughtered the fatted calf for the returning prodigal, and there was this celebration taking place. Now, on the surface of it, he seems to have a legitimate point. He had never been given so much as a small goat, or a young goat. And there's only one problem with that statement, and it's not true. Go back to verse 12 for a moment. Look at verse 12. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And notice this. And he divided his property between them. He divided his property between them. You see that? Between them. Now, we have noticed that under Middle Eastern cultural laws, that would mean that the older son got 2/3 of the estate and the younger brother got 1/3. And when the younger son requested his share, the older brother was also given the lion's share of the property. He gave him the land, he gave him the livestock, the fatted calves, and the young goats. And this elder brother is ungrateful and focuses on what he hasn't got, he complains that the Father hadn't provided more for him. Now again, this is the mark of an elder brother, the pharisaical hypocrite. He's ungrateful, he's thankless, he is jealous of those who have received more, who are given greater prestige and priority. You know, in Shakespeare's King Lear, the king voluntarily abdicates his throne in favor of his three daughters, and he finds himself reduced to poverty and homelessness because those three daughters reject him. And he says, "Ingratitude, thy marble-hearted fiend, how sharper than the serpent's tooth it is to have a thankless child." Well, this elder brother was a marble-hearted fiend. He was a thankless child. The elder brother is marked out by thanklessness. He doesn't appreciate what God has done for him. He doesn't appreciate what God has given to him. And I suppose that lack of heartfelt gratitude would express itself in an unwillingness to worship and praise, because praise is thanking God for who he is and what he has done. This man is a reluctant worshiper, focusing on the things that God hasn't done for him rather than the things that God has done for him. There is jealousy in his heart. Is there true heartfelt gratitude that bubbles up in your heart every time we sing these songs and we meet for worship and we listen to the Word of God? Could it be? And I only ask the question, I don't make an accusation. Could it be that there's no real love for God in our hearts in the first place? And that we are elder brothers rather than returning prodigals? So the marks of the elder brother: a lack of joy, a lack of love, a lack of guilt, a lack of thankfulness, a lack of compassion. There seems to be a total lack of compassion towards the younger brother. Notice carefully the language of verse 30. "But when this son of yours came who had devoured your property with prostitutes." You see that? This son of yours. Not this brother of mine. He despises his brother. The last thing he wanted to hear was, "Your brother's home," or, "It's your brother." The elder brother is merciless and graceless. He's heartless. Imagine what would have happened if the younger brother had encountered the elder brother first. At the very least, he would have told him to clear off, to go back where he came from, to go back to the pigsty. At the very worst, he might have sorted him out and inflicted harm upon him. He resented the fact that the Father accepted him back. In fact, if he had truly loved this younger brother, would he not have gone into the far country in search of him in order to bring him home? Edmund Clowney, who was a lecturer in Westminster Theological Seminary, recounts the story of a young man, a soldier, who was missing in action during the Vietnam War. When the family received no news of him from official channels, the elder brother flew to Vietnam and, risking his life, searched the jungles and battlefields for his brother. It was said that the Viet Cong never harmed him because they respected his love for his brother. And in Vietnam, he was simply known as the brother. But this elder brother doesn't search for the younger brother. In fact, he resents it. And when the younger brother comes home, there's no love, there's no compassion, there's no grace extended towards him. He rejected the one who the Father accepted. And that's the mark of an elder brother: a refusal to accept those whom God has accepted. He is marked out by a lack of grace and an unwillingness to forgive. You see, when it comes to grace, I want as much as is available to me, but when it comes to others, I deal it out in thimblefuls. That attitude is the mark of a Pharisee, a self-righteous Pharisee, an unwillingness to forgive. You remember the Lord's Prayer, "Forgive us our debtors as we have forgiven those who are indebted to us." Jesus assumes when he teaches us to pray that the forgiven man will be a forgiving man. So here then are the marks of the elder brother: a lack of joy, a lack of love, a lack of guilt, a lack of thankfulness, a lack of compassion. The identity of the elder brother, the marks of the elder brother. And then thirdly, the refusal of the elder brother. The last thing I want you to notice, and perhaps the most important thing of all, is the attitude of the father. We talked about how we should name this parable, the parable of the lost son, the parable of the Pharisaical son, the parable of the lost sons. Perhaps it would be best to refer to it as the parable of a gracious father, because the love and grace of the father is so evident in the passage. Go back for a moment just to the return of the prodigal son in verse 20. "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him." This father sees this returning son and he runs out to meet him. The village would have been astounded. They would have expected at the very least that this boy would have returned, groveled in the dirt, begged for forgiveness. But instead the father, and remember that running in the Middle Eastern culture, he ran out to meet him. He embraces him. He kisses him. He puts a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And he throws a robe around him. He accepts him. It's an extravagant demonstration of costly love, a demonstration that would amaze the Lord's original hearers. Here is a father who is extravagantly gracious, magnanimously generous, lavishly loving. He broke through all the cultural expectations and he ran out to meet his son. It was a costly demonstration of unconditional love. Now, what I want you to notice, and this is vitally important, that he treated the elder brother in the same way. Look at verse 28. "But he was angry and refused to go in." And notice this: the father went out to him. The father went out to him and entreated him. You see that? The father went out. Just as he had gone out to meet the returning prodigal, so he goes out to meet the elder brother. Now I want you to put yourself back in the sandals of a first century Jew. In Jewish culture, as in Middle Eastern culture today, the respect for the father was paramount. That's why it's so difficult for Muslims to come to faith, because it's to disrespect their family, and particularly their father. But in fact, under Jewish law, disrespecting your father was a capital offense. And here is this boy, the elder brother, who insults his father publicly by refusing to come into the celebration. He was supposed to be the host of the celebration, but he refuses to come in. Everyone knows he's not there, and everyone knows why he's not there. He is publicly calling into question the wisdom and the action of his father. Does the father send out the servants and force him to come in, or forcefully remove him and punish him? No, in a costly demonstration of extravagant love, the father himself goes out to him. And everyone can hear what's going on. They hear the son's raised voice and the objections he levels to his father and the disrespectful terms in which he addresses his father. It's embarrassing for the father. But the father goes out with him and pleads with him. Pleads with him. No Middle Eastern father would have pleaded with a stubborn, rebellious son. It just didn't happen. This was a costly demonstration of unconditional love. Now, I want you to get this, that the heart of God goes out in compassion to prodigal sons, and to Pharisaical sons. God, in His grace, reaches out to both. He sent
His Son in a costly demonstration of unconditional love to die in the place of prodigals
and Pharisees, of younger sons and elder brothers, of profligate sinners and Pharisaical sinners. He reaches out to both. In fact, as I said last week, Timothy Keller in his book calls this parable not the parable of the prodigal son, not the parable of the Pharisaical son, not even the parable of the lost sons, but the parable of a prodigal God. The dictionary defines prodigal as reckless, extravagant, and God Himself is recklessly extravagant in extending His grace, in going into the far country and going out from the celebration to the elder brother. He reaches out to both. And the interesting thing is that in spite of that costly demonstration of love, the older son refuses to come in, and it is the younger brother that is received. It's the one who wasn't openly profligate, who refuses the Father's love and rejects the Father's love. And it's the profligate sinner who is received by the Father's love. Are you this evening an elder brother? Am I this evening an elder brother? Religious, yes, but joyless, loveless, guiltless, thankless, graceless. I want to tell you this evening that God's heart goes out to you in Jesus Christ. He came out to us to rescue Pharisees as well as prodigals. And please don't stand on the outside, standing on your dignity, refusing to hear the call of the Father. But come into this house, into His arms, and receive the love and forgiveness that is bound up in Jesus Christ. He will receive not only prodigals, returning prodigals, but He will receive Pharisaical older brothers. Amen.